Distinguished guests and participants, ladies and gentlemen, selamat datang and a warm welcome to the ISIS International Affairs Forum on a UNICEF Commission study on child marriage, analysis, drivers and recommendations. To begin the forum, may I invite Dato' Stephen Wong, Deputy Chief Executive of Institute of Strategic and International Studies Malaysia, to deliver his welcoming remarks.
Tan Sri, Dato', distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stephen Wong. I'm the Deputy Chief Executive of ISIS Malaysia. It's my great pleasure to welcome all of you to this National Affairs Forum. Somehow it's printed here, International Affairs Forum, but it's a National Affairs Forum. This is a joint collaboration between UNICEF, which is the main mover of this, and ourselves. We've been working together for some time. So they've decided to host in ISIS. As your host, I must apologize if things are a little bit logistically, we're normally not used to so many people, but I guess because this is a hot button issue, a lot of people are interested. In fact, until yesterday afternoon, we were still telling people that they couldn't come for this because we just didn't have the place. And their response was, don't worry, we will stand. Okay. It doesn't look that full, but it's almost getting there. And with the latecomers, I think it might be full. So please do bear with us on the logistics. We know we take our role as hosts quite seriously, although, as you can see, things here are very basic. Okay. So... please do give some take, but you know, try to make up for it in terms of the discussions. Normally for ISIS affairs, we normally have a gender imbalance. There are far more males than females for some reason. In this case, I'm happy to note that it's the other way around. So that's very good. This is a hot button issue today. We are helping UNICEF do certain things, but I think they are the ones who are driving. We'd like to recognize your moderator for today, Dr. Amjad, who will be moderating, but the representative, UNICEF representative, Marianne, Mr. Chua from the Ministry of Women and Family Development, Shamila, welcome, and Dr. Noazia, who will be the main speaker at presenting her findings for today. But for all of this, can I ask you to please warmly welcome Dr. Amjad as he moderates us.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Thank you very much, Young Barhadi, Dato', Steve, for the welcoming remarks. Very much appreciate the partnership that we have, UNICEF and ISIS, on issues related to the well-being of children. It's beyond child marriage. We have many engagements. Tansari, Dato, Datin, Datin, professors, doctors, Tuan, Puan, all protocol preserved. Salamat Bagidan, terima kasih kerana sudi hadir. I hope I said it right. So, yes, it's good to start with a smile. The issue at hand is quite sensitive to some extent. We've seen some emotion around specific issues. But I want to go a little bit, back about our research that we will have the findings today shared. It started 2 years ago, and this is a systematic way where we, UNICEF, we look for evidence and generating evidence to engage in discussions centered around evidence and bringing the informed people to guide the discussion. So I'd like to start with this, let me put it this way, we're not here to discuss the 11th years old case. We are here for bigger issues, to discuss the research, the evidence, in a very mature and informed discussions. So related to this, it's in no way that we would like to hide anything or to, but it's rather because this is a policy environment, we really need to look at the issues in a systematic way. I really reflect on social change, not necessarily child marriage, but social change in general. It's sometimes you are drawn for the idea to find instant manuals, you know, something that you do quickly to solve the issues. But the ones they work on social change, including child marriage, they know that this does not work. to look for instant manual that you change this for the mechanical-minded people that they can do quick fix. We know that doesn't work in social change issues. The ones they look for, the instant manuals for quick change, either I'm quoting here Shahruddin Ma'roof, one of the influential writers here in Malaysia. Either he indicated that they are either naive about the issue at hand, or they use the quick solution, looking for quick solution, not to do anything, because you will never find a quick solution, so basically not to do anything. We know social change, including ending child marriage, as one of those issues. It requires two things, like any other issue. It requires the right diagnosis, so we need to make sure that we have the right diagnosis. And the second thing is to look for the therapy, the solution. And this is the essence of this gathering. This research is to really look at diagnosis from academic, systematic, methodologically sound approach to the issue at the question. And all of us as thought leaders in this area to reflect and come together in a common understanding. So it's not an emotional platform to discuss specific issues, but rather the issue at hand. To facilitate the discussion, because we really need to feel comfortable discussing those issues, one of the rules that we will have for today's discussion is the Chatham House rule. Basically, we have media, we have other colleagues from different NGOs. Basically, you can report on any issue discussed here, it's fine, any issue, but you cannot specifically attribute it implicitly or explicitly to any individual or any organization. So you can report on the issue, but not to attribute it to specific individuals. If you feel compelled to attribute it to anyone, you need to seek their explicit expression of interest that this quote is correct and reflect their views. Are we clear about this? The idea, we really need to have an intimate discussion that we feel comfortable about sharing solutions or ideas reflecting on the discussion. So, like, I don't want to take too much of your time because we are here to listen to the main research finding, but just thought that these issues we can highlight them at the very beginning. So going straight to the presentation, I'd like to introduce Dato Professor Dr. Noor Azia, Deputy Vice Chancellor of UKM University. She led, along with her team member, Dr. Al-Adib, they did a research for UNICEF looking at the issues related to child marriage, the findings. It's again in a way for us to look at the diagnosis, systematically have a methodological approach to deal with the issue rather than having emotional reaction to incidences. So Dato will take us through her finding and share with us some of the insights. We might agree, disagree, that's the, even in UNICEF, we have certain issues that we thought that maybe we can reflect based on our international experience. But our differences, we need to have them later on. We'll have, after the panelists, we will have a forum where we can discuss in a very mature way. Welcome, Dato, and the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. Selamat pagi, yang saya hormati Dato Steve Wong, Ms. Marion Clark, Mr. Amjad as the moderator, Mr. Chua, Ms. Shamila, and also I think some ladies and gentlemen, Datuk-datuk, datin-datin, tuan-tuan dan perempuan sekalian. This research, I'm just going to go straight to what I have done, the research that I've done with Dr. Muhammad Al-Adib, and this was commissioned by UNICEF, and I think we started this in August 2016, and we finished it 8 months later, and then this is the end part of it, where it got into the the working paper is online, and then I think UNICEF is looking at various way of publishing the completed research. Now, what I'm going to do is, I'm sure there is no need to talk about what is a child marriage, and a lot of people know what's the definition. And I'm going to go straight into child marriage and CRC, and these are the some of the articles that actually regulates why child marriage should be curbed or stopped because of the issues of it actually in, free, it actually freedoms of the, children are not free from discrimination if you practiced child marriage, and also Article 3 of the CRC in relation to best interests of children. And the other convention that is much related to child marriage is CEDAW, and this is Article 16 per se. Now, from my research, from the various literature that we have looked into, these are the implications of child marriage. Yeah, child marriage actually violates children's rights in terms of social consequences. There are the negative effects on girls' education development, high probability of divorce and separation, distorted personality and development, high incidence of domestic violence, sexual exploitation of girls, child marriage is a cause of death worldwide, low social status, persistent state of poverty, and then in medical, in terms of medical and health issues, it is a high risk, health risk, risk of prolonged and obstructed labor, high risk of contracting sexually transmitted diseases, and psychological and psychiatric disorders. These are from our work that we have gone through, all the materials, the literature reviews, and so on. Now, my research is, we started 1st of August 2016 to 30th June 2017, and my co-researcher is Dr. Muhammad Al-Adib from the Faculty of Islamic Studies of UKM. And it covers in detail the practice of child marriage in Malaysia within Muslim and non-Muslim contexts, Orang Asli, Bumi Putra, and refugees communities. And specifically, this report presents the following: available information on child marriage in Malaysia within Muslim and non-Muslim communities and among indigenous populations, data from the Sharia courts and also indigenous courts for the past last 5 years, data of all marriages 16 to 18, which we didn't get it from the Department of Registration, but we got it from secondary sources from LPPKN, because LPPKN had done some work and they were able to release us those data. And explanation is some of the states in Sabah, Sarawak, Kelantan have high incidence of child marriage compared to other states. And what I'm going to do, in this research also, we had an overview of child marriage as discussed by various Muslim jurists and authorities, practice and drivers of child marriage in Malaysia within the Muslim and non-Muslim context, among indigenous and also refugees communities, decision-making practices and trends of the Sharia courts in approving child marriage applications, ongoing initiatives and interventions by government, civil society, communities, etc. And we also look at bottlenecks and barriers to the effective prevention and respond to this problem, and we also make some recommendations at the end of our research. Now, in relation to methodology, what we have done was, this is a qualitative research that employs several research instruments. We have a roundtable discussions with stakeholders, 14 agencies. We have in-depth semi-structured interviews. This involved 130 married children, Malay, Indian, Bumiputra, Sabah and Sarawak, Orang Asli, Rohingyas, and to explore their narratives, perspectives, and insights. We also interviewed 19 Sharia court judges and also court officials, 5 government agencies. We have 10 Orang Asli and Miputra community leaders. We also interviewed Muftis and the members of the Fatwa Committee, and then also civil societies. And from that, we were able to get, we were given access to analyze 2,143 case files of the Sharia court in 7 states. But due to, I mean, we have promised the JKSM, we have already given them the report of our the product of our research, and we will keep them as it is seven states, but we're not going to name those states where we have done our research. Yeah? And they wanted it to be confidential because we look at those files. But we didn't take any information except we're just looking at the decision why they applied to marry and what was the reasoning behind the approval of the applications. Now, as per Islamic law, in relation to Islamic law perspective on child marriage, we've gone through a massive literature on this. According to the jurist, puberty is not a prerequisite for marriage to be valid. The validity of marriage, syarat sah pakah perkahwinan, for Muslim is male, female, ijab kabul, wali saksi. Yeah? And under Islamic law, any child can be married off by their guardian before they reach the age of puberty, if and when they are deemed to be physically ready and fit for marriage. Majority of jurists that such marriage cannot be consummated until both husband and wife have attained sufficient maturity of puberty. And also, jurists also agree that children are not to be married when it is not in their best interest. If it's the best interest of the guardian, they're not supposed to be married. And then last is the whole issue of the hadith. And from our readings, that the Prophet Muhammad's marriage to Aisha is a special marriage and only practiced for the Prophet. Yeah? And then we look at data of child marriage from various agencies. These are what we managed to get. From Department of Sharia, this is what was reported, 6,584 cases from 2011 to 2016, which is slightly more than 1,000 applications per year. Since the National Registration Department declined to give us to share the data, statistics for married non-Muslim female were provided by LPPKN. This was from 2005 to 2015. We have 5,215. These are for non-Muslim. They are married 16 to 18, yeah? And they need to get the approval of the chief minister. And from the Majlis Adat Istiadat Sarawak, on the other hand, recorded 1,472 child marriages from 2011 to 2016 among non-Muslim women Putra in Sabah and Sarawak. I will explain later that this figure actually does not reflect what is actually happening on the ground. And then Department of Orang Asli also, this is from the Orang Asli Census 2010, gave us about only 196 cases, but out of 63,883 married couples of the Orang Asli. And we were not able to get data from the Statistics Department, but we do have some of the census, but that must be kept confidential. The number of married children who never attended school is about three times higher than those who had. And from the data, Malay, Chinese, Indian ethnicities showed an increase of child marriages over the years, with notably sharp increase among Indian communities in 2010. Child marriage among non-Muslims was about twice as much as that of Muslim children from 1990 to 2010. And most of the married children, families' background were of the low-income earners and due to lack of academic qualifications. Now, I'm going to look straight to the drivers of child marriage from Sharia Court's file. This is from the Sharia Court. We went through 2,143 files and from in the seven states. And one of the main drivers is family low economic background. Yeah? And the overwhelming majority of married children's parents have a monthly income ranging from 300 to 2,000 per month. The family economic situation implicitly influenced the participants or the respondents' decision to get married after quitting school. Some parents benefited financially after marrying off their daughters, especially when their son-in-law is employed. Some children gave money to their parents after they got married and secured a job, providing that their families needed their help after the marriage. The second drivers in the Sharia court is ineffective parenting skills, lack of parental communications and monitoring led to children's engaging in premarital sex. Parents did not know the effective measures to take in responding to their children's sexual and reproductive issues. Yeah? And number three, children were not attending school. If you look at one of the reasons why we want to stop child marriages is because you are now going to deny them rights to education. But in Malaysian's case, particularly in the Sharia Court's file, they left school before they actually made the applications. Yeah? The majority of children, particularly girls, quit schools a year or two before marriage. It was not, however, marriage that caused them to quit school, but rather the later involvement in premarital sex. The main factors are family can no longer afford the cost of education, forced to get a job, accessibility to schools, bad learning experience, pregnancy, and seeing no further academic potentials. These are some of the things that we've got it from the files and also from later on from the interviews as well. The other main drivers are children have sexual and reproductive health related issues. Most children had had sexual intercourse with their partners without understanding the consequences and without knowledge of safe sex, and many of them getting pregnant as a result. Pregnancy is a driver that compelled the participant to get married, together with two drivers that were previously discussed, and they get legal protection offered by Islamic law in Malaysia, such as matrimonial rights, right of legitimacy for children, and avoiding legal prosecution. And children say that they must take responsibility to marry after having premarital sexual intercourse. And main drivers, again, background of education. Half of the male applicants in the Sharia court had completed secondary school with SPM qualifications and had sexual and reproductive health related issues that caused them to rush to get married just a few months before they get to 18 or even after. A handful of children who came from religious school background reported that they were never involved in premarital sex, but they got married due to religious reasons. Yeah, we have those applications and I will tell you later. The courts assessed the children's applicants' readiness. This is within what the Sharia court does, yeah? In terms of marital life and looking at physical and reproductive aspects. And then reason given by Sharia court in approving the applications is if the applicant, especially the male, are able to support the family that is going to build by the marriage, and also sometimes they ask the parents whether the parent could help the couples, yeah? Some assurances from the parents. And then they test them on some basic Islamic teachings, you know, whether they know the fardu ayn, and then also compatibility of managing household and family supports after marriage. The Sharia court permission is required for child marriage cases that include the following: arranged marriage, transnational marriage, white spousal age gap, and marriage involving foreigners. Now, from the files, from the 2,143, 10 applications were denied approval. And these are the reasons: presence of element of coercion, meaning the child was forced, no consent from guardian, lack of knowledge of basic Islamic teaching, unemployment, I mean the male is not employed, and also because they have criminal records. Now, the other thing is that in the Sharia court, Malaysian Sharia court have different ways of application. Some Sharia court application must be made by the guardian, some Sharia court by the applicant, by the child themselves, and the parents must be present at the application. Now, 15 cases, male applicants' ages are 35 to 58. This is what I call child marriage. I mean, it's a big gap, but it's out of 2,143, it's only 15 cases, yeah, but still it is something to think about and which may raise concern. It's a big gap, and because the female is under 16, yeah, because in the Sharia court you only make the application to the Sharia court if the female is under 16, And I will look into the non-Muslim law later as to why this is done. So what we felt that there is no proper SOP, there is no standard procedure for all the Sharia courts. So each Sharia court have its own way. And of course, we all understand that Islam is a matter of states, and each state is responsible for their Sharia courts and their laws and procedures. And out of these, 67 cases involved conversion to Islam, and 9 cases, applicants were not involved in premarital sex, but cited religion as a reason to marry. These are children from the religious school that would like to marry to avoid them from getting into other masyats and stuff like that. Yeah? And then a reason for higher incidence of child marriages in some states, some Sharia court judges, I wouldn't mention the states, view that these cases, the applications as trivial. They delegated these cases to be processed by court officials. No doubt in the enactment, application must be made to the Sharia court judge, and the Sharia court judge must interview, must talk to the applicants and see whether they are fit to marry. But there are cases where they did not do that, and it was done through the counters. I have to mention this, but I've already mentioned it to the Jabatan Kehakiman Syariah. We have made the presentations, and also before that, I was involved. I was the chairman of the task force for the Ministry on Child Marriage in 2013, and the product of that was for us to send it to the Sharia JKSM, and they also have started to talk about having an SOP. So they have had now drafted an SOP that which they hope to be implemented by all Sharia courts, but it's still in the process, and we have done, I think, 3-4 meetings on those SOP. For Sabah, for Bumiputera in Sabah and Sarawak, the native courts has no jurisdiction to process the marriage application, resulting in children easily getting married without obtaining any approval and assessment from any authorities. Marriage are deemed to be valid because they are not bound by LRA, they are not bound by, if they are not Muslim, they are not bound by Islamic law, and therefore they are only bound by customary laws. Yeah, and now the interesting part, when we did our research, we managed to get this from the Sharia court. From 2011 to 2016, there were 2,479 cases of divorce involving under 18. Of 18 years and below. And the highest is in Kelantan, and the second highest is in Sarawak. But that is not part of our terms of reference to our research, but we managed to get those information because we felt that it's good to have a look at the some of the things that they are married young and they also divorced at a very young age. Now, these are the number of female non-Muslim children, 16 to 18, that married according to states. And this for 2011-2016, we've got this from Sarawak. And please do not take any information from this, yeah, because some of this are not supposed to be published. Yeah, I really hope you do not take this. And these are from...
Sorry if I intervene. And this is, we go back to the rule that we always agreed on, unless the speaker give explicit approval for you to cite, you cannot cite, okay?
Yes, please do not take this information from my PowerPoint. In fact, I'm going to take it back and from my CC, from what I put on the board, because this is supposed to be only for UNICEF, and I hope this is from LPPKN. I've got this from them, and this is the figure of this is published already by LPPKN, but they got it from the Jabatan Statistics of Malaysia. And you can see that which states have the highest number, and you can see that it's Sarawak have the highest number of underage marriage. And now, Now I'm going to talk about the narratives, what we have done was we interviewed 140 respondents, some of whom were under 18 of age, 89 of them, from different backgrounds, but the rest married underage, but now of course have come to age of, some of them are 23, 21, and so on and so forth. But the 89 are under 18, from different backgrounds. All respondents were married between 2012 and 2016 while underage according to law, and many of them also had children at the time of the interview. And the interview focused on the participants' narratives about the drivers that led them to marry, the justification for their marriage, their life and experiences and post-marriage, and the support they receive after the marriage. And the three common factors are family economic backgrounds, which I've already mentioned just now. Children were no longer attending school. And last is the sexual and reproductive health issues. Yeah. Now, on the health and I've talked about the income group from the Sharia court files because they are within those range. Yeah. But in relation to sexual intercourse, in relation to premarital sex, sexual intercourse with their partners, which sometimes resulted in pregnancy. Some participants had premarital sex as young as 13, and either with boyfriend or casual acquaintances. Some female participants said that they had sex with more than one boyfriend and did not get pregnant, while the majority of participants said that they had only been pregnant once, and others disclosed that they had been pregnant more than once. Pregnancy was therefore one of the drivers that compelled participants to get married. Majority of participants did not practice safe sex and were ignorant of the consequences of sexual activities, despite claiming they received advice information from their peers. Remember, they only get information from their peers, not from an adult, not from the proper channels. They lack accurate information on safe sex and consequences of sexual intercourse, meant that majority of participants did not take necessary precautions to avoid pregnancy, and also the stigma attached to premarital sex was another reason why participants opted to marry. Now, the other thing is being responsible. Analysis of data suggests that they marry to be responsible, to a task to be shared by both partners. The perspective was rooted in tradition, religion, and values that some participants and their families have held. For example, a Malay girl in Selangor married at the age of 15 after becoming pregnant by her boyfriend, who was 7 years older than her. The girl said that she had no choice. What done is done. She admitted that she had been unprepared for pregnancy and had decided to marry after she delivered her baby safely. The couple, they did a DNA. I know DNA test is expensive, but I presume they come from a well-off family because the boy didn't want to marry her. So now to be responsible, to make sure that is his child, so they did a DNA test to prove that the boyfriend was the father of the baby. The family also insisted that she married. My mom said, just get married as long as you are responsible. What was unique about this case was that this girl stayed in school even though she was married and had a child. She placed the baby with a nursery near in her neighborhood, and she went back to school. The narrative illustrates the concept of responsibility as it is understood by the more conservative segments of Malaysian society with regard to children having premarital sex. Narrative married participants again. This is after they got married, yeah, when they face a lot of challenges such as a relationship with their spouse, hence there's so many divorces, families and in-laws, having to raise children, managing household chores, and also family commitments and financial struggle. I mean, you just imagine, some of their partners are not even working, and that's the reason why the Sharia court refused approval. But some, the family said, we will help them out. But then they were probably staying in with their families or in-laws. So these are some of the problems that they have. The Rohingya's participants showed a stronger commitment to family planning to avoid second pregnancy due to unsubsidized medical expenses. compared to most Malaysian participants or respondents. The respective families gave support if they had any problems or marital issues. Parental support is vital for their family life. They had very little knowledge of social security services offered by various government agencies and Islamic institutions. Apart from the Rohingya, there was no incident of domestic violence in the cases that the interviews that we had. So they don't have that, but they because they had to struggle within the family and so on. And then now I look at the legal the key bottlenecks, barriers to effective prevention and response to child marriage. Now the most part is the legal provision on child marriage. Under Islamic law, Muslim girls can marry at the age of 16 and female at the, and male at the age of 18. However, if you a person below the age of 16 wish to marry, they have to apply to the Sharia court to get his permission and consent. There is no specific SOP in place of assessing child marriage application in the Sharia courts. Instead, judges exercise their discretion. Some courts are very good, very strict. Some are very very lenient and just say it's a trivial matter and anyway they wish to marry and the wali are there already. Then under customary law, we need to note that orang asli of West Malaysia and Bumi Putrau, Sabah and Sarawak can marry under their customs without having to apply for permission from authorities. Thereby, such marriages are deemed to be valid. Indians marry under customary Hindu law. No doubt that marriage is not valid under LRA because all marriages must, in Malaysia for non-Muslim, particularly in West Malaysia, must be under LRA. But what happened is that they only register it when they come to an age. And of course, for non-Muslim, subsequent marriage can legitimize children. So even if they have children. My question is that if they do have children when they are at the age of 16 or 15, that is a sign of statutory rape, but there were no prosecution, there were no police report because they were legally married under customs. They were just staying happily until they come to an age. So that's why, and those are the children that we interviewed as well. So they wait until they get above 18 or above 21. So then only they register the marriage. Under civil law, law reform marriage and divorce, the legal age to marry is 18 and 16. And those who marry under that age, the marriage is void. And those who wants to marry 16 to 18, you have to apply and get the permission of the chief minister. But I think at the Institute of Advanced Islamic Studies, I did ask an ex-chief minister who was present at the forum. I said, did you sign any document? He said, I can't remember signing any document. So presumably it was done, you know, rubber stamping process. So that's it. Because I did ask, when we were doing our research, we did inquire to some of the chief minister's office whether they have received this application. They did. They say yes. So who actually signed? And they said, well, it's processed within the office, and it was sent back to the Jabatan Pendaftaran Negara. Now, I also like to note that sexual intercourse with a girl under the age of 16 is rape under the penal code. But again, it has an exception. If you are legally married under your personal law, then you will not be caught. And this is one of the issues in relation to some of the rape cases that we have. There was a rape, proper rape, not statutory rape. But then the rapist went off to see the parent and wanted to marry so that he will not be prosecuted. And I think that is something we need to think about. No. These are the government initiative. There is no specific law that prohibits child marriage except the statutory rape provisions in the Penal Code. And of course, the LRA, which make the marriage to be invalid right from the beginning until they later on register it and make an application when they are above 16. But there is no punishment as such. Statutory rape, yes, you can get 20 years in prison, but you can look at the numbers of cases under statutory rape. Yeah, and a lot of cases were not even filed. They did not make any police report, and it just went on. And when I interviewed, I did a research with children in Henry Gurney in 2010, and I met a couple of young boys. These are, and they are above 14 because they were there in Henry Gurney for 3 years, and they were there because of statutory rape. And the main complaint that they said to me, "This is very unfair, auntie," they said, "because we had consensual sex with my girlfriend. I have to stay in Henry Gurney because my girlfriend's mother made a police report and my girlfriend is out there, you know, having a gala time, and I have to study." And that's also one of the reasons these two children in Henry Gurney now have very good results, because they are not all doing all criminal activities. They are there because of statutory rape, hit and run cases and minor offences, and they're now going back to school and you know, focusing on their SPMs and so on. So these are also some of the things that we need to look at. And I was the chair, the Family Ministry of Women, Family and Community Development established a task force on child marriage in 2013, and this was also due to one of the cases of such as like that we have recently. And we have also submitted to the ministry. And when I say that addressing the child marriage and further action, for further actions of the ministry, what I found out from JKM is that they submitted those reports and then write to JKSM particularly, so that the judges will start thinking of the SOP. But then when I presented my research product to JKSM, then they say, okay, this is the second time and we will start doing the SOP. I think that is a serious matter that we need to look at. And also, I think LPPKN has implemented various programs to address the sexual health and reproductive health issues, and there are agencies for child marriage at the National Registration and also with JKSM. Now, in my research in relation to recommendations, we wanted to have a proper, I think the SOP must be done by the Sharia court, because of the issue of the law is as such that you can marry under the age of 18 and 16. But to me, if you look at the literatures on this, many of even the Muftis actually say that you can change the law if you want, but you have other consequences to that. So if you want to raise it to 18, making all marriages below 18 void, then for Muslims, there are certain issues that you need to look at. Creating a policy to empower girls in their school's environment and to prevent any possible dropout cases and to support pregnant students, like what Malacca has, a Sekolah Harapan, where they continue to study, gave birth, and then they sit for their PMR or SPM or whatever exams they need to do. And they have proper teachers coming to teach them there. And also, and I was hoping also that some of the government centers where you have girls with statutory rape cases, where they should be able to, teachers from school should come there and teach them so that they can take the exams. And creating a policy to establish secondary education specifically for school dropouts. I think Thailand has done it. In my recent meeting in Thai, it shows that they have done that in terms of children who are pregnant out of wedlock. Establishing support system and social security for newly married couples, multilingual campaign through social media and address the multi-ethnic community on sexual and reproductive health and child marriages issue, training Sharia judges involved in child marriage application process and obliging judges to report cases of statutory rape to the police. And also we would like to get what we have recommended in our task force was to get the JKMs, the Pegawai, to give a report to assess the child and give a report before the judge could make a decision on whether the application should be approved, and revisit and review implementation of current program to meet the need of comprehensive and school-based sexual health education. Many challenges in implementing this sexual and reproductive health education, like peers program in national school, faced by educators and advocates because of the lack of interest, parents' attitude, opposition from religious leaders, issues with local health centers, and also opposition from teachers. And Again, should there be a minimum age to marry? I just put this question out. Should there be, should the present age of marry from 18 to 16 be increased to 18 for all? What happened if the minimum age to marry is 18 for all children in Malaysia? You must have a standard rule as such. And these are my views. Age is not a condition to valid marriage for Muslims, and if marriage is solemnized in accordance with Hukum Syarak, we are going to declare, are we going to declare any marriage contracted below marriageable age as invalid marriage? Is Malaysia going to make age as an additional requirement to a valid marriage? Need to look at Hukum Syarak. What happened if Muslim couple get married in Thailand, Indonesia, and other parts of the world? If guardian or wali allows his underage children to be married, are we going to prosecute him? We have the law that you know, if he married off their children without the permissions of the Jabatan Agama, no proper application and so on. And we have fined some wali as well. And the Sharia court has also declared farakkan, pisahkan pasangan, had dissolved marriages of a children and an adult some years ago. And also, will a child who is pregnant out of wedlock be prosecuted by Sharia court for zina or halwat or giving birth to illegitimate child? For Bumi Putera Sabah and Sarawak and Asli, will they be also be prosecuted for statutory rape if they marry an underage girl under their customary law? And so my conclusion is that marriage, child marriage should be stopped, as it is a form of abuse and it denies children their rights to education, rights to be treated equally, and right to be children, I think, first. And government must take necessary steps to curb child marriage and gradually abolish it. Marriage must not be used to avoid prosecution for rape or statutory rape. With that, I thank you for listening. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dato, for the excellent presentation. Very much value your research and bringing all views, even some of them they conflict with our UNICEF view, but in the spirit of freedom of expression, we want all views to be on the table. But related to mention, just I also need to have a clarification on one issue related to the issue of data that we ask everyone not to publish. It's not because UNICEF does not want data. We are clear. We are very transparent in everything. But this is because it's a request from the government, and we need to respect the instructions from the government. Thank you very much, Dato. And now we will have two renowned panelists to share their views reflection and views on the issue of ending child marriage. We will start with, we're very privileged to have Mr. Chua here with us from the Minister of Women, Children and Community Development, Undersecretary for Policy. And we're very privileged to have you, Mr. Chua, to share some views. If you go ahead, please.
Dr. Amjad, thanks for all for attending today's forum. Well, I'm rather relieved when Dr. Amjad told me that I only have 5 minutes. So it made my job much easier. Okay, so I only have 5 slides actually. But let me put it, make it short, but let me be precise of the topic that we're talking about. The first slide is talking about I believe all the members in this forum, we know that Malaysia is a state body of CRC. Yeah. So the government, especially Ministry of Women, Family and Community Development, we are well aware of our commitment, okay, internationally, which is we're talking about the best interest of child, okay, on child marriage, we know about this. And in CEDAW, we're also talking about marriage is not good for young girls. And at the same time, we also cited this fatwa committee that child marriage is actually not healthy. Yeah, but having all this in place, I need to inform as well that all of us actually do know that this country, our law, do allow child marriage. Yeah, so that is what I wanted to say. We know about the so-called the bad part of having this child marriage. And when we talk about child marriage, normally you also involve another concept, which is early and forced marriages. Yeah, so it's not just early, but if it involves some certain aspect of force kind of thing. So it is all bad, but how bad it is the part that we are talking about, right? Even both are young, it is bad, we don't like that, but if it is old and young, it's even worse. It shouldn't happen it that way, yeah? But this is we're talking about level of how bad it is. But we realize about that, as I mentioned just now, Ministry of Women, more so, we don't support this particular idea, yeah? But at the same time, we do know that our law allows all those to happen, yeah. And next, this is all the existing laws, and we are talking about all the policies that we have, CRC, and a lot of it. In fact, Dato' Noazia already shared with us just now. Yeah, I'm not going into details. As I mentioned, generally we know about this. We know that. Yes, it's contradicting, if you're asking me. Yes, at the same time, we know, but at the same time, it happens. Yeah, we know it's bad, but again, this is to hem me in law and our society's values and practices itself. There's some conflict. How are we going to reconcile all this? Okay, next, then we're talking about some certain initiative that we have. For Ministry of Women, because the law allow, and then therefore we always talk about how can we create the kind of awareness. Yeah, we know it's bad. How can we make the society agree with us that it is bad? To make them understand that it is not good for our child to marry that early. Yeah, because if the individual, the girls or the boys themselves, they know that this is not good, they won't do that, then it solves our problem. If they do not understand that concept, but the parents know about that, then again, I hope it solves our problem as well. And if, let's say, the children and the parents do not understand, and the society knew about this, and tell them off that you shouldn't do this, then again, it would help the whole society to curb all these issues. Yep. So that is why we in Ministry of Women, we stresses on this particular area, which is on awareness. How can we create the kind of awareness? But we do have our sets of limitation. Okay, that's why, as what Dato' Azia mentioned just now, how to cover that whole area. Okay, including reproductive health. The syllabus itself in the education, we have some certain resistance. Yeah, and it is not just true in Malaysia. It even happens in Singapore as well. Even though it's a government, Singapore government actually do in their education system, they want to have that portion, that social reproductive or sex education, into their syllabus. But even in practice, they still have their problems because of our Eastern value. Yeah, because we feel shy and we don't talk about it. And it's over and again in our national child council, we do have children as the members, okay, which is chaired by the minister. And that is the participation part within the concept of CRC, yeah, because we want children to get involved in the whole policy making processes, yeah. So in the council itself, whenever we discuss anything about children, they are in. And when they were in, I still remember our former minister asked all these kids, when you go to school, they have this syllabus, are the teacher teaching them? And it is again, over and again that they are telling us that no, teacher said we know better. So they skip that syllabus kind of thing. Yeah. So that's some of the problems that we need to address in the future. You see, to have it in the structure itself, and we need to address our values, our shyness. Whether as parents we talk about this with our children kind of thing. And this is a big change to us actually, because Malaysia we develop rather fast, and financially we have improved a lot since we merdeka. But our thinking, our values can be very much still at some certain level, which is not necessarily be bad. Okay, in order to have that family unit's values to be intact, those values actually is very rich. But because with this new technology, we actually do have a lot of issues because technologies actually, when we did our child online protection guidelines, and we involved children as well, and they told us, they said, Mr. Chua, you are the government, they told me. Okay, he said, please, internet is very bad for us. Can you please throw away this online technology kind of thing from us because it's so bad. We see bad things happen. And we told them, not just because a knife can kill somebody, and we go back to Stone Age, right? I mean, how are you to cut if you don't have knife? But when the whole society is progressing, do we have all those support systems in place to create the kind of awareness among children, among parents kind of thing? So this is definitely the area that we need to get into in the future. Okay, this is the last two slides. Let me please say, the ministry's stand is very clear. Yeah. As what my ministers said in the statement itself, okay, getting young girls or young boys to get married is going, I mean, we're talking about full potential, how to develop their full potential. You are actually stopping them from developing their whole skill sets. Okay, so this is definitely that. We believe children can have more choices, better choices in the future if they are given that kind of opportunity. Yeah, so we do not support this, and we always fight for children to have the kind of rights to attain their educations at the higher level. And as what Dato' Azia mentioned just now, it is putting pressure on their physical and emotion as well. Imagine a child have to take care of other babies, right? And imagine everybody would put pressure on them to behave like a mother when they themselves are child. Or father kind of thing. I mean, let me put it this way. Sorry, I know everybody always asks, where's all the boys, right? When we talk about all these issues, it's always only ladies involved. But for me, for a young marriage, it is not just the pressure for the girls. Even the boys, they just don't know what to do, right? How is a young boy going to take up all those responsibility? I cannot imagine that. Yeah. Okay. Okay, and also we are also talking about as what Dr. Jia mentioned as well, the divorce rate seems to be rather high as well, which is very bad. You get into a bad beginning, and then that whole vicious cycle would keep repeating. Yeah, so definitely we believe if they get into a marriage too early, there will be a lot of social issues maybe that would entail. And then another thing that I would like to highlight here is again is stated by my minister. Yeah, the commitment. It's as such that we are committed to raise the age to 18. Yeah. But let me put it this way. Having it in the law is one thing. Whatever happened in society is another thing. Yeah. When we say we want to raise the age limit to 18, what does it mean? Right? When people get into a marriage, sorry to say, but in some certain a point is actually to legalize sexual relationship and so that they can have child. Yeah. So we need to separate until between marriage and sexual relationship or sexual activities. You can stop all the child from not getting married, but you cannot stop them from having sex. Yeah. And when children have sex, it's just too bad that there's a tendency that they might, especially young girls, might get pregnant. Yeah. So that's all those kind of consequences that we need to think about. We don't allow them to get married, but they will still have sexual relationship, then what are we to do? If we want to do that, definitely we need to make sure that the support system is going to be there. Yeah, or else we thought we solved the problem. But I am very worried about that. Yeah, but what I want to say is, as my minister mentioned, it is a promise in the Boko Harapan's as well, is to raise the age to 18. And my minister already mentioned that we are serious about this. And definitely, we need to think through in the whole process, as I mentioned. It's not as easy as to change the law to increase it to 18. And as what Dato' Asia mentioned again, we are talking about federal and state governments' authority. Yeah, and that is definitely not a simple task as well. But my minister will mention that. We are serious about this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shuwatz. Excellent. Excellent highlights, and especially I just linked also about the task force. I think we will be happy to see ways how we can work together and bring our international experience. But I will move to also Ms. Sharmila, if you can also kindly share some of your insights about how we can end child marriage.
Sure. Thank you very much. So I'd like to just thank ISIS and UNICEF for inviting Voice of the Children to present some views on child marriage in Malaysia. And just taking up from what Professor Dato Azia has shared with us. Fundamentally, there are no benefits or positives to child marriage. It is a human rights violation. It puts the child at risk, the child's personal development, the child's well-being, the child's health. And when we talk about child marriage, we're also not just talking about the child who's getting married, we're also talking about the children, the offspring of that marriage. So we're also talking about the children who they are going to have. And it's those children who are also at risk that we need to think about. Especially girls who are married early, they are neither physically nor emotionally ready to become parents. Boys as well. And in particular, with girls, you know, if you speak to doctors, medical research suggests that a woman's body is only ready to bear a child to full term without any risk to mother and child from the age of 25 onwards. So even 18 is quite young. And how much worse if the child is still, and the pelvic area of the woman, of the girl, is still in the developmental stage, how much worse for the mother and child? So two child marriages leave the couple, both the boy and the girl child, with little access to education, economic opportunities, very, very likely, and I think this is being played out by the research that Dato' Azia has shared with us, very, very likely they're going to end up in poverty, them and their family, and that cycle of poverty and hence abuse and violation, not just domestic abuse, I'm not talking about that, but I'm talking about the kind of abuse that people suffer when they come from the lower strata of society. That kind of abuse will continue. And one of the most important things that we rarely talk about is the fact that child marriage is an economic cost to the country. It requires a lot of intervention from society, from the state, from the government, to assist couples who are married early, regardless of whether both the couples are young, underaged, or where one party is young, underaged. So I'm just going to go through these figures very quickly. These are figures which are available on the internet and which we've picked up and used in terms of the census. But one of the interesting things that we can ascertain from child marriage in Malaysia, unlike child marriage in many other countries, child marriage in Malaysia is not a girl thing only. There are a lot of young boys getting married. There are a lot of underage boys, boys below the age of 18, who are getting married to girls who have reached the age of maturity, who are 23, say, for example. So that is a phenomenon which is peculiar to us in some ways. Also, the fact that it is not just a Muslim problem, which a lot of people think it is. There are, as Dato' Azia has shared with us, there are a significant number of non-Muslims. And by our estimates, really it's a 2-to-1 kind of ratio between the Muslims and non-Muslims. But if you think about the fact that there are more Muslims in the country anyway, by virtue of population, then actually what you're talking about almost equal numbers. If you talk about number of population. And also, it's something which is not just happening in rural areas of the country, which again seems to be something that people pick up on. It is something that happens very much in the urban areas as well, not far from the cities. But one of the things which is common is the fact that these are the common factors. It is always to do with lack of education, lack of knowledge, lack of awareness. And when we talk about lack of education, it's not just lack of education of the child who's getting married. So as Dato' Azia shared, a lot of the children have already left school much before they get married. They'd already left school. So I'm not just talking about the fact that they're no longer attending school. They're not informal. A formal education system. They're just not getting any kind of education at all. But they also come from families where there is lack of education. So you'll never find, or you rarely find, a family where there are two doctors or two professionals, their children getting married early. But it's always among the people living in estates, people living in villages, the rural and urban poor, people living in very, very high density but low cost accommodation. That is where we're finding the incidence of child marriages. And then, of course, the lack of knowledge with regards to having sex, basically. And when we take the view as a country, when we take the view that sex is a taboo subject, it's something that we're supposed to be embarrassed about, that if we teach children about safe sex, then what we're doing is actually encouraging them to have sex, then we're going to see more and more of the incidence of child marriage happening and growing. So what we really need to do is target the issue and say that, you know, we need to tell children that sex is not something they should be having until they are of age, until they reach the age of maturity. But if for whatever reason they need to go off and have sex, then understand what is going to happen. Take precaution. We do not teach children about contraception, for example. So because of that, children are getting pregnant, the girls are getting pregnant, and then you have the story that was shared earlier, do the responsible thing, get married. Or because you're pregnant, then we have no choice, get married. So when we give people choices, and real choices, we actually reduce the chances of them being forced in a sense, or feeling in some way coerced into getting married early. And a lot of it also is to do with the family economic background situation, like we said, the urban and rural poor, as well as lesser in Malaysia, but it also exists, gender disparity, gender discrimination, the fact that men are seen to be protectors of women, protectors of the girls, and therefore, if they are in a certain community, then there needs to be that kind of oversight. A man has to have oversight over a girl. But the reality is that there's a lot we can do about creating safe spaces for our girls to be in so that there is no need for that kind of association. So Voice of the Children, actually we're very happy with the kind of results that Dato' Azia's research has produced, because it kind of shows and gives credence to what we have been saying for many, many years, that it is not a race, religion, cultural issue. It goes across the borders. It is an issue of education. It's an issue of poverty. It's an issue of lack of awareness. That is where it stems from. So what we need to do is lift the discourse out of the religious debate, out of the racial and cultural debate. We need to put it on the platform, which is the correct platform, and that is, it's an issue of education, it's an issue of teaching and learning, so that then we can approach the issue in the right way. As long as we keep it at the lower level of saying that it's racial, of saying it's cultural, of saying it's religion, then it kind of ties a lot of people's hands, and that is not actually the true situation or the true picture. So we have taken a very strong position for some time now, the organization I represent, Voice of the Children, that we need to end child marriage, that we need to set a minimum age of marriage at 18. Now, there are a lot of people who come up and say, yeah, but what happens to all those children who find themselves in early pregnancy, issues of illegitimacy? The reality is that all these are also created by man. They are also laws. So you can also pass laws to address those issues. Issues of, for example, the fact that non-Muslim children who get married young, non-Muslim children who get married at a young age, their children can become legitimate. So there's no reason for them to be forced to get married when they have children. To be married at a younger age, they can wait until they're 18 to get married, is the point. So what do we need to do to end child marriage? The first thing is law reform. And when we speak to countries, in Malaysia we're actually quite lucky. We need to have zero child marriage, but compared to countries where there is 60% of girls being married off at a young age as children, then I guess we're quite lucky, if we're talking about it. If we're going to set our bar very low, then we're lucky. But when we talk to people like that, people from those countries, all of them have said, and recently Malaysia held the global conference, the Girls Not Brides global conference. One of the things that we were very clear about, the people who are working in the communities, is that law reform really helps. Having setting a minimum age really helps them go into the communities to say you should not be allowing your children to get married. Whether it's in Sarawak or Sabah according to native customary law, whether it's according to Hindu customary law, or according to other, you know, Sharia and civil law, if we set a child a minimum age, then we're okay. But also the fact is the Child Act makes it an offence to do a whole lot of things to children. And a lot of these things can border on what happens in a child marriage situation. Similarly, SOAC, the Sexual Offences Against the Child Act. Grooming is a very important part of getting a child to get married early. And this relates really more to a situation where there's a big age gap. The Age of Majority Act is a significant act that can be amended, and these three acts are very much in the hands and control of the federal government. The Age of Majority, which in effect says that children cannot enter into contracts, minors cannot enter into contracts. You need to have become, you need to attain the age of majority, age of 18, to enter into contract. The exception being these, one of which is marriage. So you can enter into a marriage contract, even though you're not 18, so you can enter into contract for the rest of your life, but you can't enter a short, you can't enter into short-term contract. Figure that out. The LRA, which governs only non-Muslims, set 16 as a minimum age, but again, that act can be amended and reformed. And the other thing is that law reform alone will not end child marriage. We need everyone motivated and mobilized. We need interministerial and interagency collaboration to educate communities, families, and children. It cannot be put into the hands of the Ministry of Women, Family and Community Development. It cannot be put only into the hands of JKM, the Welfare Department. It needs to be in the hands of all the ministries, especially education and health, civil society engagement, as well as engagement with community leaders.
Thank you very much. It's an excellent presentation, and especially that you highlighted the health dimension to the issue of child marriage. And I hope we can also have some reflection on the health dimension. We know, like, a global evidence that a girl that marries, I think they looked at age 10 to 15 in comparison to 20 to 25, increases the mortality of the mother to die in pregnancy or after pregnancy at least five times. So we know also our statistics on nutrition, in particular stunting, and which is a major concern in Malaysia. It has a dimension to child marriage. Not to talk too much, we'd like to benefit from everyone's contribution. And as a reminder, we're not here to have emotional reaction to specific situations, but to continue the great discussion that we have heard from our panelists as well as from the main speaker on the issue. But where I think we need to recognize that we have the issue of law, like especially the fragmented law across different frameworks in Malaysia. It's one issue is the law, but as everyone highlighted, it's not only the law. Again, we need to come back that social change does not have a quick fix, but it's an area we need to fix, that's for sure. So the law, but it's also we need some issues were highlighted through all three presentations. We agreed on poverty. Poverty as a driver of child marriage, but as you highlighted also, poverty is a consequence of child marriage as well. It's also the issue of education. It came through very strong. We need to make sure it's not only deprivation of the child care of her fundamental right to receive education, but it's also it comes down to children. A child raised by an educated mother will not be receiving full information about in nutrition, or likely she or she will not be education. But it's also the behavior change. We need to look at also the dimension of the behavior change. It's how we can bring everything together, like behavior change, whether religious leaders, whether communities. So all those dimensions we need to have discussion around them. And I'll stop here and open the discussion. If you may, when you have.